Welcome to His Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. And start your day with a word of God in prayer. This morning, we have a special guest. We get to talk with Dr. Adam Francisco. He's author, speaker, and associate professor of history and political thought at Concordia University in Irvine, California. He's also a contributor to a new book from CPH called Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. And welcome to His Time, Dr. Francisco.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being our guest today.
You're welcome.
Well, tell us, what is this new book from CPH, Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age? It's part of a companion, or it's a companion to the Faith on the Edge series, which you were greatly involved with. And what is the relationship between science and faith? Is science inconsistent with the history of the Bible? What's this relationship between science and faith?
Well, you know, in public discourse or popular discourse, lots of people like to characterize as faith and science, or religion and science, as being opposed to each other. But that's, you certainly can find that, but that's typically, historically, and even presently not the case. There's lots of overlap in knowledge in the realm of science, broadly conceived, and also knowledge in the realm of theology or religion. I think if you look back historically, one could argue, and there have been a number of authors who have done this, that the roots of modern natural science, the method, the assumptions are buried deep in the history of Christianity. So they aren't, one shouldn't see them as being necessarily hostile to one another.
When did we start trying to separate the two? When in history did we really start to try to separate faith and science to leave them almost opposed to one another?
Yeah, great question. I don't know if you realize that that's a loaded question for a historian. There are lots of instances looking back where you see it beginning to emerge. For the one era that most people will point to is the Enlightenment, which begins shortly after the 30 Years' War in the mid 17th century. And as people, as Europeans kind of look back at that war from 1618 to 1648, a lot of them came to the conclusion, though this isn't really the case, that the war was fueled by or caused by differences in religious confessions, Christian confessions. And so you get thinkers, great thinkers in Europe, trying to figure out how a war such as the 30 Years' War could be avoided in the future. And it was suggested that when it comes to human knowledge, this makes it kind of a little too basic, but when it comes to human knowledge, religion lies in the realm of the private sphere. When it comes to public knowledge, that's public property, and the way you obtain knowledge or truth or scientific understanding of things in that realm, in the public realm, is either through empirical inquiry or rational reflection, or a blending of the two. Faith and religion and theology is to be kept or walled off from that public discourse on what is truth. So that's 17th, late 17th, up to and through the 19th century. You can find earlier, though, in the late Middle Ages, there was a man named William of Ockham, 14th, early 15th century philosopher and theologian. He was a Franciscan monk who suggested that faith and reason are two separate categories, if you will, such that the truths of faith can only be known by faith. The truths of reason or science can only be known by empirical inquiry. And he sort of put faith and reason as if they are not necessarily hostile to one another, but while they may reach two different contradictory conclusions, that sort of double but contradictory truth, both are legitimate. And as you can imagine, if you've got conclusions based on religious reasoning or conclusions based on empirical reasoning that are conflicting with one another, and you move into a more modern, critical, skeptical age that doesn't have a religious underpinning as Europe did in the late Middle Ages, that's going to be not just criticized and heavily scrutinized, but the religious aspect is going to be found wanting upon scrutiny. So you see Europeans, Western culture, 18th and 19th century, moving further and further away from having a being comfortable with there being paradox or mystery between religious knowledge and scientific knowledge.
So in order to, do you have to check your faith at the lab door in order to be a legitimate scientist today?
You know, I'm not a scientist myself in the natural sense, but from other scientists, from general, my general scientific disposition as a university professor, I don't think so at all. In fact, I think the two complement each other wonderfully. Now, certainly religion or theology deals with a subject that is not available to immediate empirical investigation. So the truths of theology, especially the higher truths, the nature of God, the doctrine of the Trinity or the deity of Christ, matters like that lie outside the realm of science. So scientists or scientifically minded people, that's something that they ought not even speak about, really, as, you know, using the rules of natural science. But unfortunately, they oftentimes do. So when it comes to our natural world, though, I think a scientist, be they Christian, Muslim, atheist, or whatever, they're looking at the same material, basically, the same stuff. And they can certainly, they can potentially come to the same conclusions. Where things go terribly awry is when the assumptions the scientist has, whether it be assumptions, atheistic assumptions or Christian assumptions or something in between, when they look at that evidence, the empirical evidence or the natural world, they oftentimes interpret it in light of the worldview they have before they've even done any sort of research. And that's where the divide happens. It's impossible to approach science really broadly conceived without any assumptions. Everybody has hidden assumptions buried deep within their psyche that they learn from culture, from their upbringing, and so on. But that is the goal of science, to obtain objective knowledge about our world without assumptions informing our conclusions. And when scientists, regardless of what their disposition is towards religion, come to conclusions that are informed by or determined by, even stronger, by assumptions based on faith before their inquiry, that is no longer science. That's more, if you will, ideology. I think that's enough about that.
No, that was great. That was helpful. And I think you've answered this already, because in your explanation, but our world is focused on answering life's questions with definitive and concrete answers. We always want, you know, these concrete answers to life's questions. Can science do that? Can it answer all of life's questions? But I think this comes back to what you were saying, that we always have assumptions. It's nearly impossible to approach anything without some assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in science can, all science really can do, and we're talking about natural sciences here, is describe the world as it is. That is, from its particular vantage point. What marks a truthful statement in the realm of science is when you say something about the world and it actually corresponds to what we see in the world. And the more other scientists check that claim about the world or that assertion about the world and find it or see that it passes scrutiny, the more we can rely on those claims about the world. But those are claims about the physical, natural world. Science doesn't engage in, it's not, at least per its own rules, doesn't talk about abstract things. It doesn't talk about, if you will, concepts and ideas. And so when science says, make some sort of moral assertion or an assertion about the morality in the world or the meaning of life or anything like that, science is then venturing outside of the realm of science and into the realm of theology or perhaps philosophy. And that's, unfortunately, there are a lot of scientists, the popular group right now would be the new atheist bunch, who aren't acting as scientists when they make all these grand statements about the meaning of life and the uselessness of religion and so on. They're outside of their discipline. And it's unfortunate that many people listen to them because they have that title of scientist, you know. But they're actually not working as scientists. They're working more as ideologues.
And who gets paid to do research as an ideologue?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people.
Well,
I wish I could tap into that market myself.
We need to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll continue talking about this new book from Concordia Publishing House, Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. We're talking with Dr. Adam Francisco from Concordia University in Irvine, California. Stick around for more His Tide right after this on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Teaching the faith, spiritual care, acts of mercy. These describe the work of a deaconess. Your pastor provides you with word and sacrament ministry. Consider a deaconess to aid him through other means of caring for your congregation. Her loving hands can bring Christ's love in specific ways tailored to meet your congregation's needs. You have a need, consider a deaconess. For more information, please contact your district president.
KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth or sync up to listen in your car while driving anywhere. There are many easy ways to listen to worldwidekfuo.org. On the air, online, and on demand, the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity. And we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Do you have a reason to reach out to us at Worldwide KFUO? Is there a piece of communication you'd like for us to receive? It's not hard to reach us. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. If you missed it, the street address is found at the bottom of our homepage online, kfuoam.org. Every day we bring you the gospel of Jesus Christ in word and song. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to His Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking with Dr. Adam Francisco. He's an author, speaker, and associate professor of history and political thought at Concordia University, Irvine, and also contributor to a book from Concordia Publishing House called Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age. It's a companion to the Faith on the Edge series, which Dr. Francisco has been greatly involved in. Dr. Francisco, who is a good audience for this book? Who would find this book helpful? Looking at Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age, just the title alone, it brings up, conjures all kinds of things of what's going on in our society and culture today. Who would be a good, who would find this resource helpful?
Well, it was originally designed for obviously a literate audience, but by that I mean an audience that is interested in the questions of the day, that reads the newspaper articles on this or the books or watches the History Channel or Discovery Channel documentaries and so on. So anybody who's, whether they be in high school or certainly young adults, college age adults and beyond, who's interested in science, the intersection of science and religion or science and faith, it's for that audience in particular. It's also for that audience who's interested in that and is sometimes troubled by the claims that science makes, especially the claims science makes concerning religious belief. So in a sense, it works a bit apologetically in that it tries to explain expose the assumptions, the religious or worldview assumptions behind a lot of modern scientific and other phenomena, but also helps defend, in a sense, Christian truth or the Christian worldview in light of those claims. So it's primarily for that audience. It could be used individually too. It's not, I think We originally wrote it for with the idea of it being used in a small group or a Bible study type setting, but I think the individual would profit from it as well. So if you got a student going off to college, it might be useful for their for their devotional life, if you will, because every chapter in this companion volume and also just the series of books or booklets, if you will, has a devotional aspect to it. It opens with an introduction with Bible verses and a short little Bible study, and concludes with a reflection from the text of Scripture and a prayer. So it's for a broad audience, to make a long answer short.
So how would this be useful for, you mentioned, for a student who's going off to college for the first time? How might this be useful for them? What are the questions and challenges that they're probably going to face as a first-time college student?
Yeah, well, of course, it depends on the college, mm-hmm. but generally speaking, universities across the board, whether they be public or private or even religious universities, are going to emphasize the sciences and the truth in the sciences. There are certainly exceptions amongst liberal arts colleges, but so that's going to be front and center in their university experience, regardless of what their major is. And the university climate itself is amongst the students, and you'll find some hostile professors who work to undermine Christian faith or any religious faith, and oftentimes have this sort of, they carry this assumption that religious people are, in a sense, backwards when it comes to their intellectual life. And so for a student entering that environment, a series like this is extremely helpful in thinking about the claims or just the ethos of the university they might go to or be a part of, but also it might be helpful in answering some of those claims that the secularist, if I can use that term, uses, or the people who have these pretensions of being scientific use, especially when they criticize Christianity.
You mentioned that students are about learning truth, the seeking out truth. What constitutes truth in our society today, and how does faith and science in a skeptical age define truth? Does it define truth?
Boy, it's all, I don't know. I've been wondering this for maybe most of my adult life, so 20 years, because we're pretty much headlong into what people call the postmodern age. And one thing about that term, no two postmodern scholars agree on just what that means, so it's hard to say, but generally speaking, postmodern people regard truth as being relative, relative to the culture or to the individual or the community. That does, however, not mean that there aren't disciplines out there like the sciences and hopefully history and theology and so on. There are certainly disciplines out there who assert that there is, in fact, objective truth that certainly can be discovered and ought to be asserted. The Christian in the public realm, in the university or anywhere, the task of confessing our faith in the modern world is extremely difficult, because you've not only got to know your own stuff, you've got to know the culture you're dealing with. And every culture, America has just a number of subcultures. Universities have dozens and dozens of subcultures, and being able to understand that culture and address that culture appropriately, winsomely, I might add, is extremely difficult. Again, a series like this would be very beneficial, because not only do we or the authors look at the natural sciences, but there's a whole, something like six chapters on sort of the new spirituality, which, used to be called back in the, I guess, 80s and 90s, the New Age, but now the New Age has become so popular, it's no longer weird. But the assumptions of it are just everywhere. So there's a whole section on that. And if there's one thing about people, if they're not willing to become hardcore atheists, when you ask them what their religion is, they'll say they're spiritual, but not religious. And oftentimes that spirituality is a New Agey type of spirituality. There's a section on paranormal things like mystical experiences, demons, angels, dreams, and so on and so forth. So it's the book, the companion in the series is just filled with a treasure trove of information on just a wide variety of claims that are out there in American culture and amongst all the subcultures everywhere.
Well, there you have it, a new term from Dr. Adam Francisco, New Agey. I like that.
I tell you, I remember growing up there in St. Louis, and in my youth group, we saw and watched a number of, I guess, documentaries and did studies on the New Age. It was the big concern, I guess, this would have been in the 80s. And then the 90s and then the 21st century, I've not really heard the term New Age much, not because there isn't this New Age stuff out there anymore, but because it's become so mainstream. It's very normal. I hear, in California, as you can imagine, we're all very spiritual. The universe speaks to everybody out here, it seems. And that's very much a New Agey, there's my term, idea.
Well, to put a label on it would be to label it, and that wouldn't be acceptable to label that a way of thinking, because it carries a negative connotation, doesn't it?
Right. You're not allowed to place people in roles from gender roles or to label anything, because that necessarily marginalizes them. This is all very much a postmodern idea that the watchword for postmodernism is whatever. There's no substance out there. There's just whatever. And as soon as you start describing something, especially if you label it or criticize it, you're necessarily marginalizing it, and therefore you're a hater.
Yes.
Or a judger or something like that.
And then you are labeled a hater.
Yeah, well, the postmodernists, as Richard Rorty put it, this famous postmodern scholar out of Yale, said that the postmodernist serves a more noble cause, even though he falls in the same trap as the people he despises.
Well, we've been talking about Faith and Science in a Skeptical Age, new book from Concordia Publishing House. It's a companion to the Faith on the Edge series from CPH as well. Dr. Adam Francisco has been a contributor for this series, and I certainly encourage our listeners to go check it out and find out more. You can do that. You can find out more about it at Concordia Publishing House. You can go to their website, cph.org, or call 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Francisco, thanks so much for being our guest this morning on His Time. It was great to catch up with you again.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.